Larry Appleton meets a hick from Meepos, the Spencer Mansion becomes infested with zombies, and Wonder Shows and gets even weirder. This week on 302010. 302010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those with different days. And there's so much to say. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 13 of 302010.
Lucky 13.
The number of episodes is not important. What is more important is the date range that we are working in. This is March 25th through the 31st. One of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I'm another host, Christopher Antista.
I'm a third host, Henry Gilbert.
I'm the token girl, Diana Goodman.
I really wanted that Mr. Show reference in there. And I'm a woman.
But we're going to be talking, it's a pop culture time machine.
Yes, where each week, each episode, we look at this very week, the 25th through the 31st, when the show posts, we'll have just gone through that week together. Mm-hmm. But 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, that very week, a bunch of stuff happened. And we're going to tell you that stuff. That means 86, 96, and 06. And we, as always, we start with 1986. Real quick, through the movies, this, if you listen to last episode, it was a humdinger. Lots of crap and lots of great clips, but it was
how dare you insult the GoBots that way?
So much crap.
My blood gets angry and hot when I think of the GoBots.
The pocket of Big Rock Lord.
dude, if him and Copter could get off my case. Police Academy 3 is number one at the box office.
There is no justice.
Fuck's sake.
We talked all about that last week.
Life is not a meritocracy.
I don't want to say any more about it.
Yeah, last episode we talked about Police Academy as a series in general, with Captain What's-His-Name, and but also out this week, The Money Pit.
Yeah.
All right.
Which I remember seeing like over and over again.
It was a Comedy Central favorite in the early days.
I didn't have cable, though, till like
when we were little kids and video stores started opening up, that poster I vividly remember just was there for years.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, Tom Hanks and who's the other?
Shelley Long.
Shelley Long.
The ill-fated career of Shelley Long.
She was still on Cheers at this point.
Oh, yes, she was.
Yep.
With Cheers yet? Because I keep waiting for, can we talk about the episode of Cheers where Shelley Long leaves? Mm-hmm. And still,
we'll get there.
We'll get there eventually. But yeah, this was Shelley Long before she... she thought she could be a movie star when doing this, even though this film was kind of a failure.
I believe so. I'm really interested to go back and watch it because I am a homeowner now.
Yeah.
And like yesterday, I tried to open the back door and it was like welded shut because the rain had made some of the wood swell. And I realized I'm going to have to get a crowbar and fix this shit. And then I looked at the list. Oh, Money Pit's coming up.
That's they remake this movie about once a decade for, I think, the audience of purely homeowners. Like, what is the most physical comedy we can unleash under the guise of owning a home?
Yeah, the idea that they buy a house for cheap and it turns into... I can't remember how they come in possession of the house.
Is this the
house.
Where they find money at the end of it, underground? That's another one.
I never watched the end of this movie.
No, I just remember it being a house that's like falling into the ground and it's like falling.
Slapstick film.
Yeah, slapstick film of a house that's falling apart.
I mean, this is nearing the end of Tom Hanks' comedy era before he became a serious acting man in Philadelphia and Forrest Gump.
Well, he's still doing pretty well with the comedy. There's a slump in the comedy and then he comes back.
Post-Dragnet.
Joe versus Volcano is not too far away, though, at this point, right?
Is it a flop or...
It was a monster.
No, it was a flop.
It is famously a huge flop.
I've seen it so many times.
I know. Well, it's a cult classic.
It's not a bad movie, but that it was a giant failure.
Okay, just asking.
But yeah, a movie about a house that falls apart. Also, Lucas, Corey Haim, and Charlie Sheen.
I vaguely remember
the story
of
the man who created Star Wars.
I think it's like one of Winona Ryder's first movies.
Yeah, so what? Corey Haim's a little football player, can't play very well.
Something like that.
Yeah. Corey Haim's dead, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's Corey Feldman is still with us.
It is
unfortunately.
A 1986 tragicomedy.
Yep.
Very
heartfelt.
Yeah. Winona Ryder's screen debut.
Oh, hey, oh, it was right.
And she's still with us, too. She's, did she steal the film? gift.
Man.
She went to high school with a friend of mine.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell your friend to tell her I think she's one of the most beautiful people in the universe and she should have the sex with me.
Okay.
Thank you, Diane.
Entertainment Weekly ranked this number 16 on their list of 50 best high school movies.
Yeah.
I'm going to split that pie as thin as possible.
It's not as funny as it is tragic, so I think it snuck in under HBO in those time slots before 6 p.m. where kids probably grew up watching this movie over and over again. I never loved it, but I know plenty of people who do.
TV this week, a big thing that we will realize is not that big a deal.
Well, it is. All right, so...
It is.
All right, this was the March 25th premiere of Perfect Strangers.
Oh, yeah.
This is the original version.
Here we go. Jesus.
The lyrics are so overblown.
Can we all remember the lyrics?
Sometimes the world looks perfect. Nothing to rearrange. Sometimes you just get a feeling that you need some kind of change. No matter what the odds are this time, nothing's gonna stand in our way. It's thrown in my heart like a long lost friend. There's every dark street a light at the end. Standing tall, wings of my dreams, rise and fall. Wings of my dreams, rain under
a hot air balloon. I'm running around Chicago. I don't know the lyrics.
My life, it's my dream. Nothing gonna stop me now.
The long version.
Produced by two white people you don't remember.
One of them's named Chip.
Well, that's the season one version of it.
Wow. Welcome to Chicago, everybody.
Sorry. Yeah, when ABC premiered this in like the end of March, that's a dead zone for shows. Shows don't last that long, but it would end up being the start of an era of ABC. Yeah. The TGIF era of ABC begins with this show. Mm-hmm. This show starred Bronson Pinchot and Mark Lynn Baker. And Bronson Pinchot, who I guess was that, he was a comedian who at that point was most famous for Beverly Hills Cop as Serge, the pretentious art store owner. But in this, he plays cartoon character Belky Bartokimus, from, it was like the long lost Greek cousin, or like a Greek island cousin of Larry Appleton.
Cousin Larry.
Cousin Larry, who lives in the big city of Chicago, who then his distant cousin moves in with him. And they get through a series of wacky hijinks of Balky learning about America. Mm-hmm. And that he is... So I got a clip here. I forgot so much about the show, especially that why it appealed to me as a kid and why I think it appealed to a lot of kids and why it became the cornerstone of TGIF is that Balky is a cartoon child. That's all. It's like children could fall in love with this character, and he was a catchphrase machine. He was way ahead of Urkel in being a catchphrase.
It's like
machine.
If you gave Data from Next Gen the emotion chip, like before he went through Starfleet, he'd be Balky.
I thought they were the same person for the longest time.
Brent Spiner's on
dude, that. Really? Like put them both together?
No, physically, sure, I could see that.
Yeah. So here's some of his best clips.
Where do I come up with them? You get presents on your birthday?
Of course, that's an American birthday tradition. Haven't you ever heard of that?
Of course I have. Don't be ridiculous.
That's the one.
God.
Don't be ridiculous.
What are those?
These are my Spider-Man pajamas.
Why are you wearing those?
Because my He-Man pajamas are in the laundry.
Now we are so happy we do the dance of joy! Hey! 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 Hey!
Yep. Timeless comedy.
The audience loved it!
Yeah, the thing I remember to this day is there's an episode where he is bowling, and he goes up to bowl, and everyone's like, oh, this idiot's going to bowl. And he holds the bowling ball over his head and does this ridiculous, like, stomp and tromp up to the line and then throws the ball and just gets strike after strike after strike and, of course, wins. But it ends with, of course, what is the ultimate bowling
I mean, a 300.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. Game. For the ultimate dramatic ending for... if you
pick it up that spare.
What kind of spare?
7-10 split.
7-10 mm-hmm. split, which he, of course, gets.
Mm.
Despite, I think he's actually, by the end of the episode, blind. Or something happens to his eyes, like they... Like kickboxer style throat aspirin dust in his eyes or something.
It's a it was a ridiculous cartoon of a show.
Yeah,
it's a start. It's a start of an era of sitcoms that are not good, but honestly, not quality,
but not good. I can't really prove this, but I grew up watching a lot of sitcoms. This is the first one where the wacky character was the star, not the side person. Usually, it was like a show centered around people who were very real, and there was some mild comedy in it. And the over the top person was an uncle who came over every. A couple of episodes.
Yeah, Bronson Pinchot is the star. He's first billed on it.
Yeah.
Like, Marklin Baker is just their neurotic
which
dude.
Which is such a shame, because, I mean, Marklin Baker, I know he was a stage actor for a long time. He's in one of my favorite movies, My Favorite Year.
He's
hilarious in it. And he's just a great straight guy.
Yeah, he's so good, such
a professional.
I'm a pretty good straight guy.
Which is exactly why...
That's not what I've heard.
That's why you hire him to be the guy who's just like, Balky, what are you doing? Balky, that's not what you do.
Yeah,
but
he's got that sort of neurosis thing.
Yeah.
I have to recommend... My Favorite Year is basically him as Woody Allen and Peter O'Toole as basically drunk Errol Flynn and them running amok.
Wow.
It's so funny.
What he looks like now. It's...
He's put on quite a bit of weight.
And age.
I'm really hoping that he just retired on this money, because you only see him occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, to be tortured by Bronson Pinchot all the time, at least you get money for it. But hey, let's see how good we all look in 30 years.
Nobody put his hand on his hips and shook his head like Mark Lynn Baker.
Yeah. I actually look exactly like I did 30 years ago. I was a really tall 8-year-old with a lot of gray hair. It was strange. I got teased.
That Dance of Joy scene was at least like, I like those moments where Cousin Larry got to join in on the fun with him and do physical stuff that Marklin Jacobs proved he could be in on it. Marklin Baker proved he could be in on the joke,
he's
too.
He's a really good physical comedian.
Yeah.
So when everything would go wrong and he had to run around, it was fun.
Yeah, it was so great. And this would lead to a spinoff of Family Matters. It would get paired with Full House. And Step by Step, and became the... It only lasted into 92. So the golden years of TGIF, it kind of wasn't there for a lot of them. But
we just did a Laser Time show about TV blocks. Yeah. So if you're somehow still hungry for more of this, and not just Perfect Strangers, but Full House and the whole TGIF lineup that dominated ABC... there's a whole Laser Time that we did about TV blocks, including SNCC and other stuff.
Do yourself
a
favor, look up Perfect Strangers Rap, and it's just beautiful. Just beautiful.
Also, I Dream of Jeannie 15 years later, rerun.
Yeah.
So extra.
Well, we're not going to talk about it from 85. Yes. So, yeah, it was just.
It's so irrelevant, and it negates its own existence.
I mean, it's crazy to think of a time when I Dream of Jeannie was only 15 years old. But this, it was a reuniting film that brought back Barbara Eden, who famously couldn't show her belly button on TV and in the 60s, too risque. But the craziest...
How can I control myself? I'm a man.
They get back...
You show me that belly button, I'm going to lose it.
They get back everybody except for Larry Hagman, the main star of the show, because he's too busy with Dallas. He doesn't... It's not that he doesn't want to do it. He would come back, I think, for other reunions, but he's filming Dallas at the time, and he just can't.
But why would you have a reunion movie where half of your main team isn't there?
I guess they figured Barbara Eden's all you really need. As long as if you got her, you got the show. And they recast him, too. It wasn't just like his character wasn't there. They recast him, which is, I think, even
worse.
That's
bullshit. Yeah. No.
Does this show even air anywhere anymore?
I bet it's on TV.
I Dream of Jeannie?
Yeah.
Maybe MeTV.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, probably like on Hulu or something.
And then the NCAA Finals, Louisville beat Duke 72-69.
Yeah, man, I put money on them to our Tar Heels.
Boo, Duke.
Duke sucks.
Well, they have a great lacrosse team.
Duke. No, it's just a fun meme.
I don't know anything about them. The story.
You only know their horrible news story.
Louisville is a fine town.
Louisville. Yeah.
I don't know about the sports.
Duke is a North Carolina college that is famous for often winning the NCAA. They're the winningest team in the NCAA basketball. They either routinely win or, like in this, come in second. And it has led people to, not unlike how they hate the Yankees, they hate Duke for always winning.
Yep.
There's actually this really good, if you want want to see the height of Ducate, that would come a few years later when Chris Leitner would become their star team member. And you should just watch the ESPN 30 for 30 doc, I Hate Chris Leitner, which is just about the world of sports fans that came to hate him, who still hate him to this day.
Wow.
20 years later.
30 years ago this week on March 28th, in 1986, Lady Gaga was born.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Happy
I have not
birthday.
Done enough with my life.
Not a birthday. Her actual birthday.
Happy. I'm saying happy birthday, Gaga.
Yeah, she, like...
Oh! She's 30.
Oh, I've got it ready, man. It's always ready to play.
Wait, what was the date again?
Birthday! March 28th.
Oh, that's so close to something else that I have, but...
420, loud and clear,
no,
Dana.
Actually, March 30th, James Cagney died. He was 86.
Oh, man, that's sad, see?
That's Edward G. Robinson.
I know, I'm
no,
sorry.
Cagney's the, you dirty rat. You killed my brother.
Oh, Michelangelo did an impression of him in the Ninja Turtles.
Top movie. Of the world, Ma. Right?
Exactly. Go see White Heat or Yankee Doodle Dandy, either one.
Yeah, okay. Lady Gaga, I mean, like, went from, like, a Madonna-style, like, queen of shock and crazy costumes, and I'm going to do stunts and, like, get people to talk about me, which, and then still made a bunch of music that I love, because I realized as in the 80s and 90s with Madonna, and then in the 08s or late 2000s, I'm like, I just love chameleon women who constantly change their look and sing pop songs that really get stuck in your head, so every time I see you, your hair's a different color, and you're 6 feet tall or a spider this time. Like, I can't help it. So I was into Madonna as a kid, a teenager, adolescent, like the whole time, and then right around the time, like, I guess Madonna's kind of done being a big driving force. Oh, there she is. And now Lady Gaga's, like, just super legit, and then, like, getting Oscar noms and stuff. Like,
I mean, she's a big-ass deal. I think she succeeded in being like Madonna in that they are both, like, they just both became icons of fashion, of existing, like, a lifestyle even more so than their art, though they are both great. They've created some great art,
sure,
both of them.
Yeah, but, both of them.
But, yeah. I love that, man.
Born on this day.
Wow. She was born this way on this day.
I did think about playing that song, but something even cooler. This week, Culture Club did have an album, From Luxury to Heartache. Mm-hmm. Boy George's drug addictions would cause delays in this recording, and the group would not have another album after this until 1999.
What?
Karma Chameleon was already 3 years old at this point. Oh, so if you're wondering if it was that album, no, that was... 83.
A lot of harmonica being brought to my head in this fucking episode.
Well, also that, like, Boy George was, I believe, having an affair with one of the members of the group who didn't like having a gay affair, or, like, he was shamed by it, and that kind of shame broke up the band because of that. Yeah.
Last week, the number one song was These Dreams, which we played by Heart, which is
perfect,
fantastic song.
Awesome song.
This week, an album that was released in 1985, which seems to be a recurring theme of things, because we're still so early in 86 that the way the world worked back then was a lot slower. Mm-hmm. An album would come out in 85, and there was only probably three places that you could ever hear a song in a given day, and there's only so many songs that could even be played, so it takes a while for a song to really blow up. Rock Me Amadeus is number one this week in 1986. So we will go out with a little bit of Falco and Rock Me Amadeus, and we'll come back with what happened this week, 1996.
I love you, Dr. Zayas. Previously on Cape Crisis, Laser Time's comic book podcast.
Sally Field trashed the Amazing Spider-Man film this week. She was on Howard Stern. On Howard Stern, she revealed that she only did it because a producer friend of hers, she'd known a very long time, wanted her to do the film, and also that her producer friend was dying of cancer, so it was like her last time to even spend time
with her. I just want to give you $3 million.
And she talks about how her character of Aunt May was very underwritten, and she said, you can't fit 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
That's Cape Crisis, the weekly comic book podcast only on the Laser Time Network. Check it out once a week, every Thursday.
Goofy's a big movie star now.
That was the movie.
But he's wildest when teamed with the troop.
Classy.
Sharing those very special ups and downs.
This wouldn't be a problem if it weren't for gravity.
That come with being a television superstar. So feel free to crash this party.
Bingo.
Because all recruits are welcome to join the Goof Troop.
Weekdays at 3:30 on the WB Channel 11.
Such a great song. It's tripping on a hole in a paper heart.
It's funny to hear him sing I'm Not Dead.
Oh, wow.
Hey, funny's not the word.
Why did I laugh so much?
Stone Temple Pilots.
Right after his death, I didn't put a pic. I was outside of a thrift store at night, and a stack of STP's core up to the trash can, because the trash can was already filled with CDs.
So,
Yeah. 20 years ago this week, on the album Tiny Music, Songs from the Vatican Gift Shop. Again, album was released in 95, but this single was released, or number one.
Was this the one shot on a really old camera, 60 frames a second, PAL? It looked really weird, the music video.
So Stone Temple Pilots is why it was Scott Weiland, Perry Farrell. No.
No.
What was Perry Farrell in?
Porno for Pyros and Jane's Addiction.
All right, sorry.
So I just Scott Weiland and briefly in Chili Peppers too. Maybe I don't know.
No, that's
no. There was some
you're
other.
Thinking of his guitarist.
Dave Navarro.
Yeah, Dave Navarro.
I'm your '90s rock expert here. Let me know.
There's another band Perry Farrell was in first, very very briefly, and then got
Down. Who was Scott Weiland the only famous dude from
Nobody
STP?
Knows because
yeah,
have you ever heard of the band Talk Show?
No,
because that's STP without Scott Weiland. It's the album that came out afterwards. It was called Talk Show.
Meanwhile, Scott Weiland will go to do Velvet Revolver, which was a super group of drug addicts.
A bunch of people excised from other bands, Guns N' Roses, notably.
Now, I mean, when Scott Weiland passed away, did you see the post by the mother of his kids?
Yeah.
He was just like, we lost him a long time ago.
Man. He went to my high school.
Scott Weiland?
Really?
Yep.
You're the same age? That's crazy.
No, we didn't go to high school together. I think he's a couple years ahead of me.
The song was at number one. I believe the album, Tiny Music, Songs from a Vatican Gift Shop, released this week. Also out this week, music, a new album from Busta Rhymes, Bonnie Tyler, and The Verve Pipe.
Hey!
Not The Verve.
No,
The Verve Pipe.
Hey, girl!
Which is The Freshman. Which I... did come out in my freshman year of high school. So
that's nice.
I felt like that was nice of them to do that.
You came out and...
If this is 96, then this is what Busta Rhymes was like, eat don't body in the place to be.
Hands where my eyes can see.
He did a music video dressed as Shown Up from The Last Dragon.
Oh, with the music from Psycho or Godzilla. Yeah. What the hell is this?
The Freshman.
God damn it. I remember I did like their song Photograph off the same album. Man, I was deep in a 90s horseshit.
I'm trying to remember, is this a song about a kid who died being hazed or about abortion?
I think abortion.
Right.
I want to say abortion, but I was really into it in 96.
Yeah, I think that was. I have a vague recollection of being at a party a couple years later. They played this and then Brick right after it. I'm like, what the fuck party am I at?
Well, I can't judge this because I was just listening to Weezer B-sides this week.
Movies this week. So Birdcage is still number one.
Yeah.
This is now 3 weeks that we've mentioned Birdcage. So two episodes ago, I think, is when we talked about Birdcage in its entirety.
Yep.
The prior week was Fargo. Basically, if you just go back, if this is somehow your first episode, we we've given Birdcage its due. However, I would rather talk about Birdcage probably than Sergeant Bilko, which also came out.
Well, if I said I teased in the last episode, this is what Phil Hartman was likely promoting on SNL. Hartman plays the villain in this film, the guy, the uptight, by-the-book commander who wants to undo Sergeant Bilko's motor brigade in this weird little Kansas army outpost. It's very weird. This is based on a show called...
The Phil Silver Show
that became like eventually became like much like Tyler's dad calling Home Improvement Tool Time.
Right.
The whole world just referred to the show as Sergeant Bilko, and it was rerun. They just called it that.
Though if you've never seen Sergeant Bilko, but you have seen Top Cat, you've seen the same thing.
And what I don't know this, so I can be really brief about it, is that this Sergeant Bilko, the show, Phil Silver Show, was kind of a comedy nerd show back in the 50s.
Yes.
So my dad, like, I watched this year with my father because I bought that fucking 10 movie DVD from Walmart for $4.99 with the Wizard and Ghost Dad on it. It also had Sergeant Bilko on it. And he's like, fuck yeah, let's throw in Sergeant Bilko. Because, like, his memories of the show are strong enough. My dad has discerning taste. I've heard a bunch of people talk about how much they like the Phil Silver Show. We watched that movie.
Phil Silver's great. He's a legend.
It is legitimately terrible, and I would love... Somebody did a YouTube video on the worst CG of the 90s. It is actually contained within Sergeant Bilko. They make a tank hover on a lake. It looks nothing like anything that has ever been in reality before. It is hysterical.
See, this movie makes me sad for two reasons. Number one, the kids should say the Phil Silver Show, just any Phil Silver stuff. He was kind of like outsidery and weird at his time a little bit. And so now it's sort of appreciated more now. He was ahead of his time in a lot of ways. And he's still very funny. And it also makes me sad because I just saw that this was directed by Jonathan Lynn, who wrote and directed Clue. An underrated film in its time now everybody loves.
I mean, they were both flops in their time, but Clue's actually good.
The movie stars Steve Martin, Dan Aykroyd, Phil Hartman, but its primary co-star is Daryl Mitchell, who I didn't know until we watched Galaxy Quest, the black gentleman who was paralyzed later on.
But he was
the like co-lead in a dickload of comedies until he was in a car accident, I think.
It's unfortunate. Phil Silvers is so great, though. I love him. He is one of the funniest parts of It's a Man
World.
Oh,
God, he's so funny.
He's not my favorite part of it is Jonathan Winters tearing apart...
The gas station?
Jonathan Winters is the Incredible Hulk in that film, basically. It's so great.
He literally, like, we're so happy we opened this gas station. He shows up, he gets mad, and it literally rips the entire place apart.
He's mad at Phil Silvers.
But Phil Silvers in It's a Man World, Brett, you will understand this now. Picture a guy in an open-top car driving in the middle of a river while a kid waves goodbye to him.
There you go. Now I know you.
Crazy kid. You tell me it was yellow.
Now I know.
Yep.
Man, you mentioned the director Clue.
Yeah.
Also, Nuns on the Run.
Oh, my.
Which I have seen.
I have also seen.
BuzzFeed did a very good...
Casablanca fucked that shit, but Nuns on the Run.
I had to go where Brett the car that my parents were driving went, so I had no choice.
BuzzFeed had a very good oral history of Clue article last year.
I need to watch that movie again.
It's really good.
I have seen it.
It's been
a while. My friends did a stage version of it with multiple endings.
Talk about your fancy stage friends every show.
I saw that one in the theater. I was one of the few that saw it in the theater. I got the Miss Scarlet ending.
I would have been
three. That's it.
See, that's the secret people don't know because they all watch it on Comedy Central you only got one ending in the theaters.
Yeah.
And the idea was, they'll go back multiple times to see multiple endings. Mm-hmm. No.
Very few people saw it once.
No. I got the Miss Scarlet ending and I was like, okay, so it was Miss Scarlet. And then when I finally saw it like on VHS and they just put all the endings together... Mm-hmm. That I got to see the quote unquote real ending, which is way better than the other two endings.
I mean, the real ending does tie up every loose end
and it's
every
got
thread.
Literally my favorite moment in the movie about having flames on the side of my face.
I wish I could plug a Laser Time. We have not done best worst movies based on board games yet.
Wow.
Yet.
Jumanji,
there's a Monopoly movie. I read the first. page of the Monopoly. That was ridiculous.
There's a Monopoly
is
movie?
A thing that is going to happen. Yeah, dude, Hasbro's in the movie business.
Yeah, and, I know.
Battleship.
And Battleship.
I've seen Battleship 7 times.
On a plane. I think we were on the same flight.
It was an international flight there and back, and it was just inescapable. Just on a loop. So, like, with the sound off, that movie looks fucking incredible. I don't know what's going on in the movie, but...
Rihanna's blowing... I don't know.
It was great. Angelina Jolie and Johnny Lee Miller marry on the same day Lady Gaga was born.
They were ever married.
We're in the 90s now, never mind.
Well, when Lady Gaga turned 10,
turned
the same
10,
day,
yeah.
they...
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie, yeah, I love Angelina Jolie. She is great for many reasons. Like, she's a great actress, real sex symbol. She also was, like, her publicly talking about getting a double mastectomy, like, was very brave of her. I know it's like she's
like three
to
of
say,
them,
like,
man.
Also
still not
like it, but this is kind of her forgotten.
Well, this is
man.
Back when she was crazy.
Well, I mean, she still would be crazy. Like, this was when what she got. Billy Bob was after this, right?
I feel like
she's just young at
but
that point.
Like. Yeah, exactly. She was young. She talked about being bisexual.
Like, yeah,
they
like
wore
out of Hackers.
Like, she wore a vial with his blood around her neck. I mean, they met at Hackers. They met
on
Hackers.
A year before. Yeah, a couple years before this, she was...
Zero cool.
A year before this, she was publicly dating Jenny Shimizu, the lesbian model of the time, who you probably saw her in like Calvin Klein ads back then. But they were in the film Firefox together, and that's when Angelina got gay with her.
Like two browsers ago.
I know. I always identify with Angelina, even though Angelina's like had all these famous relationships with men. I knew so many bisexual ladies in the 90s that I always identify her with 90s female bisexuality.
Yes.
Like that's what I think of
any
her.
Any woman I knew had an inkling had Gia on DVD somewhere.
Yep.
They would divorce 3 years later.
Doesn't have a happy ending.
Yep. And then they were miserable ever since. Yeah. And no one heard from them again.
Remember her with her brother at the Oscars?
Yeah, we're getting to that. We got a couple years.
TV this week, 1996, March, whatever we're talking about. Muppets Tonight, the 7th of 14 Muppet reboots.
Oh, boy.
It's the first in 10 years.
We missed the premiere, but this is 3 episodes in this week. But they had Billy Crystal on. Let's hear how funny he is in the intro.
It is worth mentioning, though, we just talked about Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah.
And, like, here's a new show.
Welcome to Muppets Tonight.
Muppets Tonight? Buddy told me I'm doing American Gladiators. Where's Nitro?
Oh, man, it's the Muppets.
Oh, great, I'm allergic to felt. I mean, look at me. I'm all buffed up and no place to go. I look like the Michelin man here.
All right, enough.
No.
I got an even greater... Because it's a spiritual remake of The Muppet Show. Yeah. The Muppet
but
Show.
But it's hosted by that catfish.
Clifford, yeah. Who's Kevin Clash, the voice of Elmo. And you heard him in the beginning of the clip.
Yeah.
You can barely recognize the Elmo voice.
Yeah.
Muppet Show took place on a theater stage. This was an actual TV show.
It was made to be a talk show. It was just to be like, this is more Muppet Show.
Yeah.
This is, but it's called Muppets Tonight, premiered on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
It was to be another, like, sort of TGIF show. It was part of TGIF as TGIF was dying.
I showed you the clip of Kermit the Frog doing his Talking Heads impression. The clip is there if you want to play it. It is great.
This clip.
You may ask yourself,
just,
where is that?
You have to see it, though.
It's so good.
And you may tell
I can't
yourself,
turn my laptop.
This is not my beautiful
The jacket he's wearing?
You may tell yourself,
full big David
this
Byrne
is not
jacket.
My beautiful wife.
It's so good. And I remember seeing it at the time, and I was like, it's a little late for this parody.
Yeah.
Or was it way too early? Because now it's just awesome that they did that.
It's just fun.
Yeah.
I love the Talking Heads so much, especially the Stop Making Sense.
Yeah. And this is great. So, like, it is the Muppet Show. I have another clip down there. I wanted to intro it before you clicked on it.
I can't stop watching
it. It's so
this.
Great.
Please, everyone,
it's
Google.
It's in a GIF. It's
Google
in a GIF.
Once in a lifetime.
All right, yeah, I'm curious to see this clip. This
so it's
clip.
It's the new version of the Muppet Show. Remember the pigs in the Muppet Show? They were on
pigs in space.
So there's a 90s update to that, but there's no space shows on television. What show do you think the pigs? Don't say it if you know it, Henry. I want to see.
I remembered it. So yeah, all right.
It was a running gag, Diana.
Some sort of Star Trek thing?
It's in the 90s. It's 96, so like there aren't a lot of popular sci-fi shows on.
X-Files?
The pigs do something else.
No.
Let's hear that clip.
I've watched this show, but I don't remember.
Bay of Pigs Watch.
Oh.
Starring David Hogselhoff as Champ Schwimmer. Miss Piggy as herself.
Introducing Pamela Henderson as Pamela.
Baywatch. So the reoccurring pig sketch was
Baywatch,
called Bay of Pigs Watch.
Bay of Pigs,
which is like, you know, writing's not always strong in the Muppets, but even that is a little terrible.
Here we are. The Bay of Pigs.
Well, it's a reference to a political issue from 1962.
So weird.
In 1996.
It was only on ABC for 10 episodes. I remember wanting to watch more of this, but
it was pulled pretty quickly. It was very hard to find. It didn't have good ratings. They had big guest stars. They had that awful Billy Crystal.
Yep.
They had Michelle Pfeiffer in the first episode of Michelle Pfeiffer. They had Garth Brooks.
The Garth Brooks, I clearly remember the Garth Brooks one and the Cindy Crawford one as having jokes that were totally going to go over kids' heads. Because the Garth Brooks one, they're like, oh boy, it's Garth Brooks. He's going to sing country music. And the joke is he keeps singing everything but country music. Right. So first he does like Fiddler on the Roof, and then he does like a Tom Jones song, and everyone starts throwing their underwear at him.
It's like a
torrent of underwear just crushing him. That's a funny gag.
The Muppets after the 70s and the 80s, I think the Muppets, they didn't know what they wanted to be. They're like, well, are we for children or are we for grown-ups? Because I think the original Muppet Show was honestly for grown-ups that then kids watch. But then they're like, well, no, wait, let's write this for children and stupid. No, let's write this for grown-ups.
You know who it was really for, like having read the biography somewhat recently? Mm-hmm. The Muppets were for England. England, there wasn't a distinction. It's just like everybody here loves it. Doesn't like we want our kids to watch things that are humorous and go over their heads and they're colorful characters. So they're really enjoying this. Whereas adults were really enjoying this.
When Muppets Tonight aired in England, it had extra scenes.
Yeah, and so like it's enjoyed. I think it has a bigger audience overseas. It's never been on DVD. Mm. It's one of those I would say few, but it's one of the many fucking things like you can't find about the Muppets.
I mean, the only clips out there are ones taped off of the Disney Channel when they re-aired.
I was just about to say that you'll notice a Disney Channel watermark in every YouTube clip you find.
Yeah.
And the show, honestly, the show probably would have ended at 10 episodes and not gone the full 22 if they hadn't had to fulfill their contract in the England instead.
It's so good.
I'm just playing this underneath as we talked about it.
It is so great.
Anyway, for the jokes for adults, though, I distinctly remember the Cindy Crawford one has like a Cyrano de Bergerac type gag with Rizzo the Rat, where it's like he wants to talk to her, but he's afraid, so he puts in an earpiece and his friend is going to tell him what to say. And while he's starting to talk to Cindy Crawford, his friend starts talking to this other rat who's got a bunch of balloons and says like, oh, wow, you've got great balloons. Can I play with them next? And then cut to Cindy Crawford smacking the shit out of Rizzo. That was not for the kids.
Funny.
It was for college-age stoners like me.
But having Clifford as the host of the show was apparently Jim Henson's idea from the beginning.
But as the show
according to Kevin Clash.
Like, it's funny to imagine. I'm like, no, Jim said I should be the star of the show, guys.
But it does have one important holdover, Pepe the King Prawn.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And I've never seen anybody more accepting of anything in my life. And I grew up in the South. Than New Muppets. Nobody hates anything more than New Muppet. Everybody hates Rizzo, they hate Bean, they hate Pepe, and they're all wrong.
Well, I love Rizzo and Bean because they were new when I first watched the Muppets, but I never liked Pepe. Pepe's had staying power, I'll give him that.
I think Pepe's fun.
And I like him more than whatever the name of the dude was in the Muppets movie. Or in the Muppets.
Also this week, 10 years ago, the Academy Awards. March 25th. Braveheart wins Best Picture. Nicolas Cage, Best Actor, hosted by Whoopi Goldberg.
It's her second one in a row, I believe, at that point.
The Goldberg chant.
And the Nick Cage, it's crazy to think, is an Oscar-winning actor.
He fucking deserved it.
No, he is amazing in Leaving Las Vegas. But though it's funny that he was, like, what, 2 years before in Viva Las Vegas? Or... getting married in Las Vegas.
Honeymoon in Vegas.
Yeah. But, though.
Three people remember that movie? That's impossible.
Though, I think back to Community when they talked about Nick Cage and they said, if you do. I'm a sexy cat. that if you make the most unpredictable choices in every film and act crazy, eventually you'll win an Oscar.
I spent 20 years speaking at different volumes. I may win an Oscar.
Yeah, exactly. But it still is a big deal. But he's only starting garbage for like 15 years.
Is he
now.
The Million Monkeys on a Million Typewriters, the actor?
No, because there is skill to what he does.
He is like remember Raising Arizona? Think about that. Great Nicolas Cage role.
I think what I would blame Nicolas Cage's bad stuff on is his bad ability with money.
Yeah,
he runs out of...
He has to take anything. We saw his mystical tomb in New Orleans.
He has a pyramid tomb pre-bought for him in New Orleans.
What?
Yes.
He's a giant comic
book. Does it have like a big gold face of him or somewhere on it?
No. Oh. No, it's just a big white pyramid, and it says with something in Latin that means like all is one or one is
all
nothing.
Is one. One is
nestled in the middle of a bunch of century-old tombs.
One is a huge comic book nerd who like named his son Kal-El. And
his name is named after Luke Cage.
And owned Action Comics number one, one of the most valuable comic of all time. And it is lost because he just didn't keep track of it. And
somebody stole it from him.
But when the cops asked, like, well, when was it stolen? He's like, honestly, I haven't looked at it that often. So it could have been in like the last years. Oh, I don't know. So that's why they're kind of screwed.
He's the only human being I know that had a copy of that comic.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking over all the list of the various nominees and stuff, and a lot of these movies I feel like have kind of fallen by the wayside.
Mighty Aphrodite.
And some of them are, I mean, Dead Man Walking, has anyone watched that since then?
I mean, we all agree the death penalty is bad.
And it's a great movie. Leaving Las Vegas is super depressing. Il Postino, everyone fell in love with and then everyone forgot.
Yep.
Sense and Sensibility is wonderful. We talked about
Apollo 13.
Apollo 13, Babe. But I think the movie that everybody still remembers that did well is Usual Suspects.
Kevin
Spacey won, and it won for screenplay.
He won Best Supporting.
He deserved that year for real. Yep. I mean, Braveheart was...
Did you hear the remaking Babe this year?
No.
With Cedric the Entertainer, it's just called Bay.
All
right, I'm going to back out.
That's good. That's fine.
Is that Bryan Singer, Usual Suspects?
Yeah. No, it's... Yes,
he wrote it. He wrote it.
No, he directed it.
No, he didn't. He directed it.
He didn't write it. He directed it. My bad.
No, Christopher McQuarrie wrote it, who just did the last Mission Impossible one.
Yes, sorry.
Did he do a movie between this and X-Men?
Yes, at Pupil.
Oh, really?
Right.
Wow. McKellen.
But yes, Mel Gibson won an Oscar for Best Directing.
Braveheart's win made him a mega director. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't his first directing film, I believe. Man Without a Face was.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a great Billy Idol song.
But then Mel Gibson found his wheelhouse, which is historical embellishments about men who were killed and tortured to death. It really worked out pretty well for him.
And he's had no problems since.
None.
Certainly not.
Everything's coming up roses.
In games this week, we briefly mentioned it in the last episode for coming out in Japan, but video games, actually quite important. Resident Evil, late March, listed as March 30th, but it's definitely March of 1996, so 20 years old.
Mm. And we should have some celebratory Jill sandwiches now, huh? Is that Jill's blood? Is that...
Well, first of all...
You can see how bothered Brett is.
This is like
his face.
The first video game joke I've gotten.
Do you... First of all, the degree to how far people will go to make a Jill sandwich joke when it's like... Name one other celebratory sandwich joke you could make. Like, no, there are no celebratory sandwiches. That's not a thing.
It was a very sweaty joke. I know. I did it for that purpose.
PlayStation 1, known especially at the time for being like, wow, this is a M-rated, scary, bloody, zombie mansion game at a time when that wasn't really a thing. A surviving and being scared in games weren't. Especially on consoles, like there was Alone in the Dark before. There were things like Mansion of the Hidden Souls. There were things that tried to be spooky, but
they still had a kid-friendly vibe that Resident Evil kind of
this very like menacing, mean to the player. Like think about every step you take and every door you open and every time you save, you use an ink ribbon and it's finite and healing is at a premium.
It
and
was
like
a lot of people's first scary game. Like, yeah, it was most people's like, oh, the first game that scared me was this game.
I think that's
Resident Evil.
That's the sole reason for its popularity.
Well, that it scared you.
Baby's
the first.
Baby first. Horror.
Well, there's the so. All right. There's a lot to unpack with Resident Evil. As many listeners know, I worked at Capcom for 4 years, and in that whole time, I was a Resident Evil guy. Like, traveled the whole the world promoting half of our like the tail end of RE5 Gold stuff into RE6, Revelations 1, Revelations 2. So much Resident Evil just. Soaking up everything, every hour of my life for 4 years.
RE8, skipping 7.
Yeah. This one was like, it's so weird because one starts this thing of Resident Evil is about scares and jump, like dogs jumping out of windows. Mm-hmm. It's about what's around the corner. It's about tension and atmosphere and being scared, and the only solace you have is a safe room. It's about weird, like, it's not just a mansion. There's a bigger you know, conspiracy here. There's actually a giant underground lab, a shark tank.
What?
Ridiculous stuff is going on underneath this. It's a huge experiment from a corporate pharmaceutical corporation that's like accidentally made zombies in the process of wanting to make bioweapons. And over the course of several games, RE2 comes out in 98. That expands into a big outbreak. And RE2, I think, is the game, and that's why it's getting the remake that everyone's asked for 20 years.
So one was only on one disc, right?
Yeah, it's one game. But there were two campaigns, Jill or Chris. You can play as Jill or Chris. They had slightly different zigzagging campaigns, which is great game development design choice because you build all the shit once, and both characters go through it slightly different. You have to record some different dialogue, and there's certain areas Jill or Chris only see. Well, but that's just a smart use of, it seems like two games, and it's like 1.5 games.
It's very economic, and I mean, it was also a difficulty thing. Jill's was easier than Chris's.
Easier,
And yeah, they came to be, they're still very recognizable characters to this day, too.
Yeah, so the thing with RE is that after 1, 2, and 3, and even Code Veronica, that's an era of Resident Evil. This fixed camera angle, I mean, not so much CV, but fixed camera angle.
CV is an evolution into...
It is. It's not into 4, but it's
a missing link.
It's a missing link between them, where it's still a static camera angles that will occasionally pan and move, but has dynamic light. Well, the new one has dynamic
light. I don't know. That's my argument with, like, that's not what Resident Evil is. And, like, Resident Evil was what it was because of technological limitations, and I'm sure if it had been the time or the money, like, it would have been a little more 3D.
Well, but, I mean, so CV had 3D environments, but then 4 is, like... Well, there's also this huge gap after Code Veronica on the Dreamcast, and in that huge gap between CV and 4, that's when the movies start. And the movies become, in a way, more popular than the games.
I have to imagine international audiences just synonymous
with
Mila Jovovich.
Hugely profitable, and I mean, there's diminishing returns and everything.
Do they call
like,
them the movies Biohazard in Japan?
I actually don't know. because they're Sony movies, and we actually don't hardly do anything with them. It's Sony and what's-his-name and what's-her-name.
As I do recall, until very recently... The original Resident Evil was only in English in Japan. It was subtitled in Japanese. They didn't have a Japanese vocal track until very recently.
For the Six, game the GameCube remake, actually they added Japanese voices, I think, for the first time.
Today. Yeah,
Then that divides these fan bases into what this Resident Evil is, and then there's 4, 5, and 6, which and everyone wants to shit on 5 and 6, but it's like. 5 is the best-selling Capcom game of all time, by a huge margin. Mm. The number 2 selling game, Resident Evil 6. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't argue with the fact that people bought them hand over fist for years. It's not a fluke. So, that's what makes Resident Evil this huge, weird thing. As someone who had to live and breathe it for 4 years, it is an absolute gigantic puzzle to me how you, what it is to people changes person to person to person. There are people who only like the movies and love them. There are people who only love RE1 and 2 and think these are the absolute pinnacle of gaming. And they're all these people are correct for different reasons. But then when you're the brand owner, what do you do with Resident Evil? It's such a strange puzzle.
And
it all started with this game.
It's a strange puzzle that involves Falcon Crest turning the Ruby key.
You weren't supposed to be told that, but you asked Capcom as a games radar journalist where did the name come from. It was an internal contest because Biohazard the band had the name on lockdown.
In the U.S.,
it's not Resident Evil because it was never supposed to be called like This House Forever, which was the name Resident Evil implies. It was Biohazard. It was supposed to be symbolic of a virus.
When it's all about B.O.W.s in the games, Biohazard is technically a better name for
it. It's a better name. But then
for the series.
It becomes this, and then Shinji Mikami is obviously responsible for a lot of what it was, and then obviously a big part of 4, and then he makes Evil Within, which is just Resident Evil
again,
reimagined. Well, the name literally Resident Evil and the Evil Within is like, come on, guys.
Yeah,
in Japan called Psycho Break.
I also think like this has a lot of people who would go on to be Clover employees too working on this game.
Yeah, this is a lot of people's careers tied up in it.
Mikami would hand off to one of his
Kamiya?
Captain
Kamiya, thank you, Kamiya.
There's Kamiya, there's Itsuno, there's a lot of people.
Hideki Kamiya.
Yeah.
And but I remember right before this came out, like, I was really excited for this game. I didn't even have a PlayStation yet. I was waiting. We had a Saturn, but seeing the ads the previews for this game at the end of 95 in magazines like Ultra Game Players really excited me. Like, I was like, damn, look at that giant snake. How do you fight that? It's such a thing in a game.
And a lot of the things that came here came from a Famicom game called Sweet Home, which was a Capcom scary house
game.
Yeah, and it's like they took some ideas from that. They took ideas from Alone in the Dark, and they made this thing kind of created survival horror, or at the very least popularized it. But... came out 20 years ago this week. So one of the biggest franchises in games and one of the most popular brand names. But again, it's that weird thing because of those movies, man. Mm-hmm. There was a period from whenever CV came out, I think it was 2000, mm-hmm. and RE4 wasn't until 05. And in between, you have Outbreak, you have other things, but mm-hmm. like there's no big numbered hook to pin that's what Resident Evil is. And in that time, two movies came out. And
the remake?
Well, the GameCube remake was 02, yeah. Okay. So they did that, and they did 0, but it's like they weren't moving things forward, really, until 4. But then the game completely changes and becomes... Well, 4 is one of my favorite games of all time. I couldn't talk enough about 4. But anyway...
Refine the third-person shooter genre into something people wanted to play. There was plenty of stuff like that.
Yeah. We'll talk all about that in 8 years.
Yeah.
But the original Resident Evil also did have FMVs, which, you know...
Yes, famous...
Cute.
A big fight with my friend, because I'm like, this is so stupid. And he's like, why do you have to hate everything? This game is the best!
I mean, in 96, seeing full motion video at the start of a game was was still like a big deal.
He had PC, so we had seen that a lot.
Okay. See, I hadn't seen much of it at that point, and so it was a big deal to me. Like, yes, you can make fun of it very easily now. It didn't have a great localization by today's standards, but... I mean, you remembered it, and if you compare it to all the other stuff back then, who else in 96 was even making like a console game with full motion video, all that recorded dialogue and cutscenes? Like, who was doing that?
It was enough that there was this point where we would rent this building and have parties in it, because what else can you do in the Midwest? And we would have, like... parties, and I think I mentioned that eventually would cause enough property damage in this building to never be allowed back. But we would play games and do whatever, and the RE1 I brought, I guess, 20 years ago this week, and it was so captivating that everyone just stopped what they were doing, and we all just played Resident Evil in a building we rented. It could have been anyone's house.
Just and your hand jobs grinding to a halt.
Yeah, it was like, it was mixed company, so man, I wish, but I would be remiss to not play at least some kind of like... dialogue of
what is it,
Barry?
What is this?
Good old Barry.
What is it?
Blood. And hope this is not Chris's blood.
And so on and so forth. I'll jump 6 minutes into the clip and see what else we got.
Is that you, Rebecca? Can you play? Wait, what is that? See? Just relax and play.
There's a whole lot of what is it. But this is also how I know the Moonlight Sonata is.
Rebecca!
I know, but just a little longer.
That's how I know, even the Moonlight Sonata. That and Earthworm Jim, too. Also, Darkstalkers came out this week. But I think...
Speaking of Capcom,
I like much more.
Yeah, it's strange, because the date on this, I got March 28th. I don't know if it's accurate, but CPS2 game based on the Street Fighter 2 engine, but... a fighting game with monsters and shit, which was really cool, and then eventually falls into its own canon and lore that I'm like, I liked it when it was just monsters
really
fighting
cool.
each other.
It was really cool, and I, at the time, really enjoyed it because Street Fighter could get embellished some, and they could also, in the Versus game, embellish some, but in Darkstalkers, that's when they could really draw some crazy stuff happening.
Yeah.
And it lets them really show off pixel animation that they were so good at.
Like crazy, crazy background. I mean, Darkstalkers 1's a little subdued. By the time you get to Darkstalkers 3, it's just bonkers with the character design and stuff.
And also, I was digging into like really granular details. Like a lot of precise fighting game things that I don't even have the terms for right now would be soft introduced via Darkstalkers.
Yeah, there are things that I can't recall them off the top of my head.
It's really interesting if you like look at what's introduced by Darkstalkers and what big new feature comes to Street Fighter. It always kind of was slightly ushered in during Darkstalkers.
Because Street Fighter Alpha had just hit PS1 mere weeks before. We talked about it a few episodes ago. And then Darkstalkers came out. I remember at the time I only had enough money. I could pick one of these two new fighting games coming to PS1. And it was like Darkstalkers, Street Fighter Alpha. And I'm like, gotta go with that Street Fighter Alpha, man. Even though I love monster movies and monster character designs and sprites and like all the characters.
Some of my favorite character designs.
Like Talbane, I love him as his wolf design. It's so cool. But anyway, that's...
That's it.
A lot. Two huge games in 1 week. Taking us out of 96. Boy, I love... One of my favorite things to do in the show is to make huge leaps before I will explain how a song gets played when they're barely related at all. In Sergeant Bilko, looking at the cast, at the bottom, it says Travis Tritt as himself. Travis Tritt sang T-R-O-U-B-L-E, a song that will not come up unless we do the show for many years. So that's
It's on the Chipmunks Country album.
Well, Anyway, here's Travis Tritt. We'll be back with what happened in 2006. Hello, T-R-O-U-B-L-E. Tell me what in the world you're doing there. Papa hit the skids. Mama had a time to raise nine kids. She told me not to stare cause it was impolite. She did the best she could to try to raise me right. But your mama never told me about nothing like a Y-O-U.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea. This is Diana's Classic Corner. We look back even further into past this week to see if we can find some classic movies that are worth watching. 75 years ago this week, March 26th and 28th, 1941, we got I Wanted Wings starring Ray Milland, Man Made Monster starring Lon Chaney Jr., and The Bad Man starring Wallace Beery, Lionel Barrymore, and Ronald Reagan. Make any jokes you want. Instead, I think I'm going to recommend a movie from 50 years ago this week, March 30th, 1966, The Trouble with Angels, starring Rosalind Russell and Haley Mills in her first movie after she left her Disney contract. It's a fine, fun, okay movie about like a girls' school and the mean nun, and then there's practical jokes and whatever. Mostly I want to talk about it because it is directed by Ida Lupino, one of the only female directors in classic cinema. She was also an actress, and she was very, very pretty. I think I mentioned her last week because she was in The Seahawk from 1941. Here she is 25 years later, still going strong, directing movies. She made a couple really good noirs. The Hitchhiker from like 1953 or so, I would also recommend. But The Trouble with Angels, if you got like little kids running around, feel like watching a cute girl school movie from the 60s, sure, why not? That's it for this week. Stay classic.
What's squishy, stretchy, and transforms almost anything? Foam is fun you can feel. Roll it, mold it, or cover it. That's the way you foam it. Look, now you can turn anything into a fabulous foam creation. Transform this wooden fossil into a fierce foam T-Rex. Turn this ordinary toy car into a foaming fast dragster. Or change this plain dollhouse into a foam-tastic mansion. Foam sticks to almost anything. And when you're done, squish it back and start all over, or let it harden and keep it forever. Look, clay is messy and hard to start, but foam turns fun into a work of art. Check it out. Tiny foam microbeads magically stick together and form to any shape you want. Now craft fancy foam to wear. Model creepy foam critters or build an erupting volcano of foam. Plus, mix and match colors for any design you can imagine. Create a stylish jewelry case or a funky foam vase. Foam your pencils so they're cool or show some spirit at school. Make costume masks, even foam rainbow glass. Take foam outside and the fun will go on. Foam your bike, a scooter, a skateboard, your shoes. With foam in your hands, the fun never stops. Just ask anyone who foams, from parents to tots. Foam, it's fun you can feel.
Favorite songs of the last decade.
Actually, you hear my parody song, Crap. I couldn't get that out. I'm so stupid. So stupid.
But that's a 2003 song.
It sure is. But the Yeah Yeah Yeahs have a new album, Show Your Bones, out this week.
Show You My Bones, Karen.
I knew it was coming. But I don't know. There, none of the songs off that immediately leapt off, leapt out at me. But if you, if one of those albums from Show Your Bones does, like, let us know on LazyTimePodcast.com on the page for this. Tell us in the comments, because I do like discovering new music. I just didn't find something on that album that jumped to me. Maps was from 2003 on an earlier album, but Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Maps is one. I wish I knew that song was around in 2003. Really could have used it then, but I didn't really know the song until Rock Band, which would come out in 2008. And again, that's something we won't. We'll have to do this show 2 more years before we talk about Rock Band.
Yeah, in 2 years. We'll talk
about just
it.
2 years. But yeah, any excuse to play Maps, I'll take it, because that is one of those songs that like would. I always enjoyed hearing percussion in songs and drums in general. I'm not a player. I can't play the drums for anything. But unlike guitar and Guitar Hero, drums in Rock Band and Guitar Hero later, or at least the thing that at least barely Baby Mode approximated playing drums. And this was a song I get to the point where I could play expert on those drums and then do it independently. Like think of the melody in my head, and then I could move my hands and feet in unison and actually played it enough to that point where I'm like, I feel like this is actually teaching me. And then I went nowhere with that and applied it nowhere and did not stick with it and learn nothing. So, but that song is important for that reason for me. So Sick by Ne-Yo is still number one, which we played a little bit last
week. Yeah.
It's a great song. New albums from Atreyu. Ten years ago, Ghostface Killah. T.I.'s album King came out. A new album from Rob Zombie. Europe had an album from Cascada. Every Time We Touch. And Daft Punk released a Human After All remix album. And man, Human After All, it's still okay, but man, after Discovery, and I think they even admitted in an interview, it's like, you can't follow Discovery. Like, that is one of my favorite albums of all time.
I know, right?
Dude, Daft Punk Discovery is one of my absolute all, like, easy top five, might be top three
which
albums of all time.
Which was the one that had anime music videos by Elijah Matson?
That's Discovery.
Okay.
Not just a music video, a movie.
Right.
Oh,
the whole thing. Interstellar.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Which is itself great. But
it's weird, though.
Yes. but they followed that up finally with Human After All in 2005, which was just not as good, but it's a very different intention with the album, so that's why it's very different. But they released a remix album of it this week in 2006. TV.
Oh, we're going straight to TV, are we?
Pros versus Joes.
Yeah, we know the series Pros versus Joes getting started with a Could You Hit John Rocker, which no, it's Pros versus Joes was a show like, oh, you guys, you normal dudes think you can do what a professional athlete does? Mm. And so it's like, play football against this guy. See if you can hit baseballs thrown by Joe Rocker.
I hope this is done for charity.
Can you draw it now as a Spike TV show?
Yuck.
But
this was done for money and sponsors.
But speaking of speaking of basic cable hits, this week had the season premiere of one of my favorite shows ever. Play the first one of the links there, if you
will. Yes, I'm ready for this.
Driver, March 31st.
The same day as the Wonder Show's in premiere.
Wonder Show's in
Friday.
Jesus.
March 31st.
Oh, God.
But it's a commercial for Wonder Shows in Season 2 that begins with this kid was killed by a drunk driver.
It's like, drunk driver killed March 31st.
See if I actually like
play it one more time.
Find the beginning.
Drunk driver, March 31st.
Same day as the Wonder Shows.
So yeah, March 31st, 2006 is the premiere of season 2 of Wonder Shows, in which is my favorite, might be my favorite comedy show of all time.
I think you could easily make the argument it's the most influential, one of the most influential comedies of this entire era that we'll ever talk about.
Yeah. I mean, you've watched a million clips of it, but you probably didn't even know it was Wonder Shows because people just hacked it out and put it on YouTube.
You mentioned that earlier that like
they were
they're clips from Wonder Shows because it's all unrelated robot chicken-y.
Well, it's a Sesame Street parody, Sesame Street parody.
Yeah,
and they would have a subject-y thing like the history of it is that it was created in 2004 by John Lee and Vernon Chapman, these two New York comedians and comedy writers who had worked on a lot of late night shows, written for all these things. They'd also written for Snoop Dizzle's Doggy Trizzle Vizzle show.
Televizzle, that's really the name of the show.
But also Vernon Chapman, we would know his voice because he wrote for South Park and invented the character Towley. So he's Towley. want to get high. He did that first, and he still actually writes from... You'll see Vernon Chapman as one of the writers in 6 Days to Air.
That's what I wanted to mention, because Wonder Shows, and even more than that, dates back to the very, very dawn of trading videos on the internet. Because the pilot was made for USA in the year
2000
for USA, and it eventually made it in. That clip made it into Wonder Shows. And
yeah, they made a pilot called Kids Show.
Yeah,
which the opening is so great. It is the same theme they used on the show, which was Kids Show, Kids Show.
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord, it's a kid show, but it's not a kid show. It is the last thing a child should watch.
Yeah, I think it introduces letters to children, and they end up fucking.
Yeah, it's like the letter K. The letters and numbers fight in one episode too.
It also opens with
that's the warning screen.
It's a warning.
It's not for children.
Yeah, it says the stark, ugly, profound truths Wonder Shows and exposes may be soul crushing to the weak of spirit. If you allow a child to watch this show, you are a bad parent or guardian. While this screaming,
yeah.
And then you get Kids Show.
I remember being I talked about dumb little Chris in the V for Vendetta era, but fiercely leftist and angry with everything. And this is the only show that spoke to that.
I mean,
it was
like the most biting satire on TV ever.
It seemed mad and mean. I think now they're just being funny.
I mean, with the
I was mad. And
they were very mad at the Bush administration at the time too. Like the Middle America episode with Middle America taking over, and he is George Bush. But I put together some of my favorite clips here.
So I want you to be white, Megan. Be white, Megan. Become white. Become white.
Can I hug you?
Sure, but I don't want to look. I don't want to feel.
It was such a fun...
So this ended up on what, MTV2?
It was aired on MTV2, and MTV2 decided... MTV2, it started as just a place where they aired music videos. When music videos left MTV, they started airing on MTV2. Then MTV2 decided they'd start having their own original programming, and they got the craziest shit they could, this being the top of it, just to be, like... I think it was to get notoriety. They knew the show wouldn't be a big hit, but they just wanted
like
a weird-ass show.
It's just a show where like every single bit is like some super hot racial topic or discrimination topic.
My favorites global politics in 30 seconds.
Yes,
and like not audio well.
So,
but,
so like you see like... To prove, like, no one cares about this show. Like, MTV doesn't. The creators don't own it. So, like, all this shit ends up on Facebook attributed to different people.
Yeah.
I see this probably about once a month, Global Politics in 30 Seconds.
It's the U.S. comes alive as a giant monster, like, shits all over half the country.
Shits Mexico's onto China.
Yeah.
And then eats the shit Mexico's.
And then the whole planet explodes. And it's like, that. Yeah. If we can make it to the year 3000, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I have to give MTV2 some credit for having sort of, like, a weird block of weirdness, because I remember these used to run with Andy Milonakis.
Yeah.
Like before or after, I forget. And that's just the same thing where it's like, here's a guy who's just going to be really strange for half an hour.
But
often really funny.
It out-weirded Adult Swim at the time, that was trying very hard with a much bigger room to play with, being weird, and this was still weirder.
It took 6 years for Adult Swim to get weird enough to hire PFFR, the production company of this show. But here's another. This is maybe my favorite of them ever.
And so many of these are like said by kids to adults who have no idea what's about to happen.
Be kids.
Slaves built the pyramids. Slaves built the Parthenon. Slaves built America. Slaves, this is your song. Thank you. Slaves.
There are little tiny kids dancing in front of a blue screen to all of these.
In front of all the things
built by slaves.
Kids doing air guitar.
Slaves! This is your song. Thank you.
They also did like the Tim and Eric-y thing of post-editing stuff in weird ways, like off of VHS. God, and I play another one. I just want to hear all of these again.
Yeah,
I,
this show is nuts.
You don't have Scrammy Boo, do you?
Oh, yes.
Patience.
So I think this was the last episode of the first season?
Yeah, so the secret of the show, Wonder Shows, was that They weren't very productive, or just that they. But I wouldn't trade what they did for the world. Yeah. But they were asked to do 8 episodes in 2 years, 2 seasons, 8 episodes each. But they could really only produce 6. In the first season, they had the pilot already, and they just reworked that. And then they had 6 regular episodes, and then they get to the season finale. And they only have 5 minutes of content for a season finale. So then they make it about patience is the subject, which means they will show you the episode 10 minutes through once.
Yes.
Then backwards again, 10 minutes again.
Yep.
And then the best part is Chauncey, who
the blue puppet.
The blue puppet.
Clarence.
Yeah, Clarence. Chauncey's the other one. The blue puppet Clarence talking to people on the street, and he is wasting time by talking about patience and just filling as much time as he has, and he finds this
just
confused.
Pushing them to the limit.
But in the patience one, he finds this confused Asian man who he just says, like, patience. And then the Asian man says, patience, 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 patience. They do that for a minute.
Yeah.
And then a thing comes up over the screen like, we're sorry for all that boring stuff, kids. Now it's time for a cartoon.
Yeah.
And it is a drawing of the two people. And they're like, patience, patience, patience.
Yeah.
They go to commercial. They come back from commercial. They're still saying patience. And then they say, oh, sorry, we've bored you with this. The only way to undo it, though, is to play it backwards from the beginning. And so then it's like, yes, 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 yes. And it's that for another, like, it was such a mind fuck. It was so great.
And also, yeah, this song about white people.
White people, yay!
White people having fun. Global domination over everyone. White people smell so bright. Genocide for anyone who isn't white. You're killing yourselves.
Oh, actually, Search Wonder Shows and Boners. That's another great one, too. But yeah, the show. So
yeah,
I
brought up horse apples. And,
I was waiting for the second season more than anything. Like, I was so excited, and they were advertising the crap out of it. Vernon Chapman and John Lee were doing a ton of interviews, except they were these very angry interviews. Well, not angry, but just like contrarian interviews of just like, yeah, we don't even want to talk to you. Why'd you do that? Why are you doing this on Wonder Shows? And we're not. We aren't. We don't want to talk to you. Bart. And they're just like, come on, man. But it was, they love, I mean, Vernon Chapman just did a whole thing of remastered some lost Andy Kaufman albums and re-released them. He loves Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, like, no shit.
I mean, oh, God. There's there's a couple more clips on there, aren't there?
Oh, yes. Let's keep this going.
Just give me a real chance.
Chance, you had your chance and you gobbled its balls.
I love Clarence so much.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, that's why I was asking if you had Scramé Boué, where he starts talking to this guy in Central Park and the guy just keeps telling him to fuck off.
Oh, yeah.
Telling him to fuck off. And somehow it turns into Scram. Do you speak English? Scramé Boué. And he ends up like ripping his eyeball off and throwing it at him. But he keeps yelling at the puppet. Like, you never see him yelling at the puppeteer.
Keep it away. Yeah, and so in the season 2, it opened with an episode that was about abortion. But they did it about liposuction. A character, they make fun of her. They make fun of the letter P for being fat. She gets liposuction, and they're like, oh, you do look beautiful, and now we listen to you because you're beautiful. And then right-to-life people are showing up saying, like, that was something from your body. You can't get rid of that. How dare you?
Oh, jeez.
I lied.
Oh, I just love
it. I forgot how that clip ends.
That's racist!
I lied.
I mean, also, so many of these.
Shut up, hippie.
God damn it.
Then maybe my favorite Wonder Shows and clip was when they got Kermit to sing Once in a Lifetime.
Come on. No, the show was so fucking good. The season 2, the season premiere that aired March 31st was so great. The Horse Apples episode, slash the Middle America
parody
episode.
But again, a bunch of people really angry at the flyover state, which I was too.
But they got some of the best comedians, like David Cross, Zach Galifianakis, John Glazer. They're all there doing these Horse Apples characters. And I also want to say the Wonder Shows and DVDs are still worth getting now. They had some of the best special features ever, including my favorite one. It's not audio, but it is the clips of Horse. There it is on the list there, but it's not audio, but it is. And when Horse Apples was a Hee Haw parody. On Hee Haw, you told a joke, and then a camera zoomed in on you. You're like,
zoomed in on you making a goofy face. Sometimes made a boing noise.
And so because they filmed thousands of takes, hundreds of takes of people doing that joke, they cut together every second of the zoom in and just did a supercut of like zoom, 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 zoom into a face, like in a person making a dumb face 500 times, and it goes for 5 minutes. It's
just an absurd show that would also, just like having the kids walk around and like ask people on Wall Street why they're killing a man, and the kid, and the guy, and the guy, beat kids.
Beat kids.
I mean, kids on the street, kids on the beat.
Anyway, the lead kid of Beat Kids as well. Like he was such a cool kid. The parents who let him do that, that was questions they had later of like, wait, what kind of parents lets a kid walk around in a Hitler costume in Wall Street? Like, why are you letting him do this? It's crazy.
Yeah. So
I love that show. Yeah. So
season
much.
Two premiered. Strangely enough, also the same week because they timed it. I think the same week 10 years ago, the season one DVD came out.
Yes.
So that enabled you to like. What I had watched the prior year with great interest, I could now like devour over and over again.
There's two left in stock on Amazon. They go for $19.99. These are things that like
you should own.
These aren't streaming somewhere. They're just going to fall away.
Yeah.
And you'll never get the extras. There's physical extras in it too. You get a poster of Chauncey, the yellow guy, the main character, that says it's a parody of the Hang in There Cat. Except it's like hang in there, and he's one hand is hanging from a branch, the other hand is holding up a noose where he's telling people to hang in there, and he's wearing a t-shirt of the people being tortured, the Iraqi prisoners who are being tortured, that, and under that it says I hate homework. That is so like that's like a joke on a joke on a joke on a joke. Yep. It is, god damn it. And if you're gonna buy them through the links on Laser Time.
Yes, movies this week. Inside Man, like we mentioned last week, was number one. They'd made it.
Yep.
Basic Instinct 2 came out this week.
Finally happened.
Oh, God.
It took him 14 years. No Paul Verhoeven. It was just the only person back was her, was Kim Basinger. Not Kim Basinger.
What?
Kim Basinger.
Sharon Stone. Go nude again.
Oh, the only person who came back was Sharon Stone.
It is so bad.
It's real bad.
Was it direct to DVD or did it go to theaters?
No,
it went to theater.
Really?
It feels like direct to DVD.
On Sequel Gaps? On the Laser Times longest Sequel Gap show? Whatever.
Ice Age 2 The Meltdown, which I'm sure is fine. I'm sure it's fine. I like Scrat or Scrit or whatever.
Scrat
He's
is
a
fine.
Funny squirrel. And then also note is Slither.
Which is great.
Yes,
it's
years
a really good film. Great. It is James Gunn's first entry into the mainstream. He'd been working primarily for Lloyd Kaufman at Troma, writing movies like Tromeo and Juliet and Citizen Toxie, and it's bizarre to see him this embedded in Marvel with one of their biggest film properties at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this is where his more legitimacy began, and it is a great. I mean. It is such a great throwback to 80s films. Like, you feel like Bruce Campbell would have starred in this if they'd done it 10 years earlier.
Instead, Nathan Fillion does.
The Bruce Campbell of our generation.
Who was amazing.
I mean, Nathan Fillion's great in it.
Michael Rooker.
Elizabeth Banks. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's just a great, gross, R-rated throwback-type horror film you don't get anymore.
Yeah,
and
I thoroughly recommend seeing
it. I loved it. It is really underrated.
It bombed horribly. And it slowly picked up steam.
I got to interview James Gunn once.
Lollipop Chainsaw?
Yeah, for Lollipop Chainsaw. He was the chief localizer of Lollipop Chainsaw, the script. And I just got to ask him, like, hey, are you going to get Nathan Fillion in Lollipop Chainsaw? Because you put him in all your movies. And he was like, well, I might rework with some people. He meant Michael Rooker.
He's also like an actor. Well, yeah. Like he acts in a lot of stuff. And a lot of Troma stuff. A lot of Loco Cycle, if you have an Xbox One.
Yeah.
he's the villain, one of the villains in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't you say earlier T.I. had an album coming out?
Yes, King was the album.
ATL came out the same week, though.
Yes, ATS.
That's some nice cross-promotion there, ATI.
Smart.
Good job.
And then for games this week, 10 years ago, Dynasty Warriors 5 Empires.
Oh, yeah. We know that's the best one. Let's not even
it's
have
the best
argument.
One of that week. Far Cry Instincts, Predator, Rumble Roses, Double X.
Wow.
Harvest Moon Magical Melody, which for which I wrote what seems to be a 1,000-word preview on Games Radar, which we talked about last episode, because it launched now, and it has random... you could see when we were trying to write regular previews and reviews, which weren't entirely working, but then it would be like, here's Harvest Moon. Well, this game isn't sexy. Make sure you mention that the girl is sexy in it. I'm like, but she's like a Precious Moments doll. Like, she's not, her face isn't childish, but like the proportions are like silly, like a cartoon. Like, well, just say she's in a sexy dress.
Well, and Rumble Roses, I borrowed and streamed from your husband, Diana, and he has never not asked for it back to this day. Never not asked for it back. Like, you don't need this at all. All right, I'll look for it. Jesus.
But he's got plenty to play.
Plenty of cheesecake.
More importantly, though, this week, 10 years old, Kingdom Hearts 2.
Oh, yes. Hey. Yes, yes.
Which stars Bugs Bunny and one of the ducks. I forget which one.
Stop
Goofy.
It.
Goofy.
Yogi Bear.
Mickey joins your team.
Quick Draw McGraw.
Stop. Everybody. This is not cool.
Care Bears Cousins.
No.
So
no,
every time a Kingdom Hearts game came out when I worked at GR, we had to...
Games editor got their wings?
We... that, not a lot of wings go that way. But no, that we had to plan a new feature of what is the plot of Kingdom Hearts? Like, explain Kingdom Hearts, because...
Me and Mander's having to, like, slave... Well, what? The story is, like,
you're all
either
looking wikis
bad
together,
or wildly incomplete.
Yeah. And it's what is both. Even Kingdom Hearts? Who goes there? What is it for?
What does the name mean? It's meaningless. It is... I love them. We might be doing something with them as we speak. We are. Brett and I are trying to stream the first game. They're long. They're very dated. But it's a beautiful celebration in a weird way of me being a lifelong gamer watching games. All of a sudden, you can't be more mainstream than starring with Disney characters.
Yeah.
And that, I've always found them really strange to look at, though, because you know, Disney characters have a design and a look. And some it ranges a little bit. Some is a little different than others. And then you plop down, like, the most anime-looking motherfucker ever in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And I have a massive bias against anime. It's a style I just cannot get behind.
Big eyes, baby.
Big eyes and pointy hair. Just
and Kingdom Hearts 2, I believe, I think the people I knew were creaming their jeans the most about the Tron
level. Tron level. The Steamboat Willie level. Like,
oh, that's
super novel. Yeah, it really... I don't know, very rewarding as far as Disney fan service go. Where not many games other than Mickey Mania had been ever. Like, no one was really celebrating the entire company's legacy. And
they made the gummy ship
better. Just that it's been 10. They got rid of it. You didn't even have to do it anymore. It's been 10 years since
a number new, to Kingdom Hearts. Yeah.
And since then, we've had Birth by Sleep and Recoded, 352 Days and, like,
days.
2.8
or whatever it is. Dream Drop Distance.
Drop Distance.
But yeah, the idea, again, the Kingdom Hearts, it wasn't just Disney. It was mixing with Final Fantasy characters. You would see, like, Squall and Cloud and
Tidus.
Waka and Tidus and all these characters.
Us talk about that on youtube.com/LaserTimeNetwork. It starts out as a very much, like... Final Fantasy characters are just as important as the Disney characters. And that gradually, like, they just stopped that. Like, no, the idea is that Disney characters are in a Square game.
Yeah.
And Square characters play two of them play a pivotal role ever. Otherwise, you're just talking to them at a shop.
Yeah.
FF characters are very diminished in Kingdom Hearts
2. Yeah, I mean, but that's fine. You don't need to go to a Final Fantasy world. You'd probably rather go to... Lion King or Tarzan Jungle for the 80th fucking
time. You also
go, hear terrible a Little Mermaid song.
I think they go to the Curse of the Black Pearl area in this. And
they do.
Oh, that's right. That's how old Pirates is, too.
It marks the 10-year anniversary of me like jerking off. We're like, now they own the Muppets. Now they own Marvel. Now they own Star Wars. It could all be in Kingdom Hearts.
This summer, the second Pirates movie will be 10 years old.
Oh,
the Davy Jones one. Whichever one that is.
Dead Man's Chest.
That's the one. I mean, I never played the second one. I finished the first one. The thing I remember most, because I had a Japanese name in the back of my head, is for the composition of Yoko Shimomura. Composer. God damn. Mm. I don't remember if she came back for the second one. I assume she did. Yes, she did. But
someone had to compose that 16-minute Traverse Town theme.
Yes. But I don't know. Just the idea always appealed to me more than me doing it again and again. Like, when I played the first one, it felt like a complete thing. And when they're like, now we're going to tell more stories. I'm like, That's fine, except it, like many things that go on, it got more convoluted, yeah. and here's more organizations. Yeah. Well, this is Organization 13. It's a division of the Nobodies, and they're doing this. With
it, like, that's what sucks. They're re-releasing it, and like these are unrecommendable. Like, I mean, even if you like the series, you can't play these again.
I mean, that's also when Amnesia comes in and Roxas and the ideas of Nobodies and your heartless self
and Organization 13. It's just, and it's
I talked about Resident Evil earlier. Just the idea, again, this idea of as these things go on, they start. As grounded as they could be given the premise, but there's this need with sequels in these kinds of games to just keep adding organizations. Mm. Well, this group did this, but well, it's not just Umbrella now. You got to talk about the DSO and Tricell and this one and that one. Well, that's STARS.
You're just adding bad guys on top of the other bad guys.
Well, it's bad guys. It's good guys. It's just all over the place.
The audience for this game, I'll just say it, anime, usually the bad guy is coolest. And it's some horseshit excuse to allow you to play with the bad guys as the good guys. So they introduce a new organization that's even more evil than the last. And the story, it is embarrassing by how little sense it makes. Like, I don't know how it even came out like the way it did. Like, I'm trying to absorb it all again, and it is not working.
Well, I think it also gets that confusing because Tetsuya Nomura is the mastermind of the series, and you get the sense that he has a very iron grasp on the entire thing.
Yeah.
And that nobody, like, he says, no, this is when Riku will meet Kairi or whatever again. Like, this, can really question the plot he has in his
head.
And
they made that simple, simple thing. Perfect video game shit. Two guys want girl, they're best friends. How do they do it? Could have been great. Fuck it! It's so wildly
and
outlandish.
On the way they get lost in Disney World.
It's so easy and it's been convoluted. Like, I read those stories as much as anybody. Here's what the story explained, and you finally like, if this is it, this is terrible. this is awful.
But 10 years ago, we didn't have all the baggage we've had. I think a lot of it is just us being cranky that it's taken this long to move forward.
And all we have left is that the template set about in 2002, and all the games do still play and look like that.
Because I have a feeling when they do 3 in the year 9 million, when it actually, for real, actually comes out, it won't be as like just hard to follow as all the interstitial ones. They're going to be like, we got to play to the mass audience.
Yeah.
1 and 2 at least... in themselves make more sense than when you try to make them make sense with everything else, then maybe 3 gets kind of back to what 1 and 2 started.
The spinoffs also had the pain of having so many repeat worlds because they have to... it's expensive to license each Disney film to get to do a world for it. And so it's just it wasn't easy.
It's like the 5-year anniversary of me writing that Kingdom Hearts doesn't matter anymore because Epic Mickey is coming out. Meanwhile, Disney has shuttered all their internal development and pretty much relies on third party anyway. So it's like 5 years never happened.
Yeah. but that's the show. Yeah. Thanks for listening. You can find out more at lasertimepodcast.com or support the show on patreon.com/lasertime, which this is a show that was unlocked thanks to your donations over there. Without you, the show wouldn't exist. How about that?
I'm only going to plug Lasertime and that we might have some Kingdom Hearts. I don't know if we're going to follow.
I
want to follow through as long as we can.
I've threatened Chris with playing through all of Kingdom Hearts 1 again while I try to keep up with Final Fantasy knowledge, and he explains the Disney stuff that we're seeing
Disney
on the screen.
On the screen.
Oh, boy.
And it looks really nice.
And watch a live streaming wiki, huh?
Yeah. And watch you try to jump on anything. Mm-hmm. That's been my most entertaining part.
There's certain things you cannot fix from 2002.
Just basic platforming of
Twin Towers and Kingdom Hearts mechanics.
Like, why does he have this kind of hang time? Also, I do a video game music podcast, VG Empire, which discusses the soundtracks of these games. Yoko Shimomura, who I just mentioned, did do all the the Mario RPG series, which recently crossed over with Paper Jam. That was a recent episode, a Splatoon episode. You can go back and forth through the list of episodes on VGEmpire.com.
Well, let me tell you about Laser Time, the original podcast that started it all. We've done so many great episodes about pop culture. You could listen to our Florida episode about Florida and pop culture. We talk about Wonder Shows and on that very episode. And there's also with Mike Drucker, special guest Mike Drucker, a writer for The Tonight Show, who's a very, very funny dude. And there's also Talking Simpsons, our weekly dissecting of every episode of The Simpsons, one at a time. We're into season 3 now. Really good episodes are ahead of us. Lots of fun. And there's exclusive episodes of it on that Patreon we mentioned, patreon.com/lasertime, where you can support us again, if I may say so.
Okay. And my husband hosts Video Game Apocalypse about video games and stuff. And if you want to hear more about classic movies, blah, 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 whatever, recommendations for me, I'm finally on Twitter at Le Ciné Nerd.
Le Ciné. Like, like the films.
Le Ciné Film. Like Le Film.
And that means it's the end of the show. Birthday theme song. March 25th through the 31st. This week, 10 years ago, and 2010. Actually, any time period, doesn't matter. Elton John!
Hey.
Birthday this week. Mariah Carey and Fergie have the same birthday, March 27th.
Interesting.
That is interesting. As we mentioned, Lady Gaga and Reba McEntire have the same birthday. On 328. Celine Dion, birthday. Ewan McGregor. Chinny Chesney. Steven Tyler. Tennessee Williams.
Ooh.
Robert Frost.
Yay.
Leonard Nimoy.
All right.
And now for the quiz.
These are like all my favorite people.
I know. I specifically dug deep into the list to find, and I saw Tennessee Williams and Robert Frost.
Are you a big fan of poet laureates?
I suppose I am. Robert Frost is good.
And now for the quiz. Born on March 26, 1985.
My father!
Oh, wait. 85.
Turning 31. Turning 31 this week.
Holy shit.
Briefly seen in Phantom Menace. But later,
Keira Knightley?
Damn it.
Yeah!
Later starred in Bend It Like Beckham, co-star of Pirates of the Caribbean, was in Love Actually, Pride and Prejudice nomination for Best Actress or Supporting Actress?
I think Best Actress. Yeah. Bend It Like Beckham is fantastic.
It is really good.
I love that movie.
But she, she's, man, now she's turning 31. Guess she won't be casting anything anymore.
She's going to start playing moms.
Yep.
Oh, God. What was she in that Everest movie? Just like, you are the concerned wife of Mr. Black.
She's in Civil War as Aunt May.
Taking us out, Chris, you recommended a Kingdom Hearts 2 song.
Oh,
so,
baby, Sanctuary.
That's what we're going to do. We'll be back next week with another look at what happened this week, 30, 20, and 10 years ago.